bottom and look up.
Tips and tricks. You have an Appendix B of Rebel reporting for journalists.
Yeah. When we put this book together, we wanted to include something for students, because really what I hope for this book is that this will become, you know, a recommended reading for journalism students across the country. And so Catherine Comp of Free Speech Radio News and Laura Brickman, who is an intern at WRT, and I put together this appendix. It's web links, it's resources, it's something to basically take what you've learned in these lectures and get going and go out and do it yourself.
Well, I want to thank you and congratulate you on this book. You are certainly doing John Ross honor. Rebel Reporting is the book. John Ross speaks to independent journalists. It is co-edited by Norm Stockwell, who's been at WORT here in Madison, the community radio station, for 33 years. Congratulations. That does it for our program. A very happy birthday to Samin Farkindeh. And I'll be speaking tonight and Friday night in Toronto, Canada. Check our website at democracynow.org. On Saturday, I'll be in Troy, New York at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. Sunday, back in New York at the Left Forum. And on Monday, I'll be speaking at the Philadelphia Free Library. Check our website at democracynow.org. Special thanks to Mike Burke, Dennis Moynihan, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Charina Nadura. Also to all of our folks at Democracy Now!, I'm Amy Goodman in Madison, Wisconsin.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with a guest host, Paul Rowland. Today's guest is filmmaker Josh Fox, who is touring the country with his new film, How to Let Go of the World and Love All the Things Climate Can't Change.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, As Time Goes By in Shanghai, showing Thursday, May 19th at 7 p.m. As Time Goes By in Shanghai tells the story of Shanghai's Peace Old Jazz Band, performing together since 1980. Aged between 65 and 87 years, many of them have been playing jazz since the 1940s and have seen the world transform. From the Japanese occupation and the Cultural Revolution to capitalism on overdrive, the band members have seen the many faces of China and withstood government suspicion of jazz. Again, that's As Time Goes By in Shanghai, Thursday, May 19th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be a founding sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival. The 29th annual festival takes place this year from July 1st through 4th and includes performers like the Tedeschi Truck Band, Jimmy Vaughn and the Tilt-A-Whirl Band, Samantha Fish, and many, many more. Festival passes are on sale at early bird prices until May 31st. More information about the festival performers, the options for passes, and other information can be found at kboo.fm/WBF2016.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the May 21st performance of Lalgudi Krishnan and Shahid Parvez at the First Baptist Church in Portland at 7 p.m. Lalgudi Krishnan began his musical training at age 5, and over the years he has carved a niche for himself as a top-ranking violinist. Shahid Parvez descends from 6 generations of sitarists and is the recipient of numerous prestigious awards, including the Government of India's Padma Shri. Again, that's Lalgudi Krishnan and Shahid Parvez, Saturday, May 21st at 7 p.m. at the First Baptist Church, located at 909 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Do I hear a sound? Beware. rocks from the ground in the air.
Times mass incarceration equals planet devastation. They privatize the nickel dime. Our lives were gasping to survive the worldwide plantation. Our water, air, land, homes, jobs, food, schools, and books. Who snuck and took it? The Wall Street orchestrated, picking our bones and our scabs just like a vulture, while spreading the scourge of global monoculture. Cause they want you a consumer.
Good morning. It's me again. I'm subbing this morning for Joanne Hardesty, who's down in Salem. This is Paul Rowland. I always do Wednesday Talk Radio, and now I'm here on Voices from the Edge. And that was Reverend Billy and the Stop Shopping Choir with their hot new CD called The Earth Wants You, which is the same title as his new book, which I also have, and both are well worth checking out. And I have on the phone here in Portland, Josh Fox, who's been burning the candle at both ends. He was on my show for a few minutes yesterday, and he's doing a tour, Let Go and Love tour, and he's presenting his film, doing a Q&A, and then playing music and talking late into the night. So I really appreciate having him back on. Good morning, Josh.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Oh, fine.
Excellent.
We're having a great time here in Portland so far.
Right on. Well, I want to talk to you about that in a minute, but let me introduce my other guest, Jasmine Zimmer Stuckey of Columbia Riverkeeper, their senior organizer, who's been working tirelessly on many, many different projects along with her organization and many other organizations here in town and around the region to stop the plague of fossil fuel infrastructure and export terminals. Good morning, Jasmine.
Good morning.
And so we're going to have a all-around discussion on from the local to the global and back again, because your film tackles a kaleidoscope, or I think as I put it in my mini review on our website about this show, an archipelago of resistance to fossil fuel devastation. Which I think is kind of appropriate in a sense, because you focus a fair amount on island nations, and not just, but also in a sense, some of these communities that are fighting against all these projects all over the world, from, you know, tribes in the Amazon to communities in Pennsylvania and New York to Longview, Washington, are, you know, maybe no longer so isolated, but certainly for a long time have been relatively isolated in trying to fight these struggles, and you bring a lot of those together. So let's just start off, Josh, and the reason, Jasmine, is we're talking about the hearing coming up on Tuesday, next Tuesday, in Longview on the draft environmental impact statement, which is out and which Jasmine is familiar with. We'll be able to talk about that. And we'll also be having a call in from Les Anderson, who's directly involved. He's with the Landowners and Citizens for a Safe Community in Longview. So he'll be with us in about half an hour. But how'd the show go last night, Josh?
Oh, it was great. So let me just explain what we're doing. Every time we screen this film, and we're doing this thing called, yes, the Let Go and Love Tour. For the name of the film is How to Let Go of the World and Love All the Things Climate Can't Change. It's a film that goes all over the world focusing on the issues of climate change. And it opened at Sundance Film Festival in January. It will be on HBO at the end of June. So in the 6 months between, we are hauling all over the world and all over the United States. We're hitting 100 cities that are specifically fighting fossil fuel infrastructure or specifically imperiled by climate change. And since everyone is imperiled by climate change, we're focusing a lot on resistance. And as you know, there's been a lot of resistance against fossil fuel infrastructure here in Portland. There was an amazing series of events last weekend called Break Free, where people were blockading various fossil fuel sites. There was one in Anacortes, Washington, where they blockaded trains coming in and out of a refinery. Just amazing, bold action to try to take back, you know, the building blocks of our world right here, which are imperiled by further fossil fuel use. And right now, even though we know we have to get off of fossil fuels, the fossil fuel industry is expanding. It's expanding all across the United States. There are proposals that are active proposals right now across America, created by the Obama administration, supported by Hillary Clinton, that would transfer our electricity grid to fracked gas. Right now, we get a lot of energy from coal, burning coal. And, of course, what we have to do is move towards solar and wind, which can, with all the renewable energies combined, along with efficiency, that can create 100% of the electricity that we need. But instead of moving in that direction, America is moving en masse towards fracked gas, which is a very, very disturbing development, because it's causing a lot more fracking onshore. A lot of people drilling and fracking for natural gas. There are proposals for 300 new fracked gas power plants to provide electricity generation in the United States. There are proposals for LNG terminals to liquefy the natural gas, LNG liquefied natural gas, and ship it to Asia. So truly turning the United States into an extractive sort of third world style economy where we frack up Wyoming, Idaho, Colorado, and then we don't actually use that gas. We liquefy it, send it overseas. So these are extraordinarily disturbing developments right now, and they're creating a situation where everyone is fighting fossil fuel infrastructure. Everyone's got a pipeline going through their backyard or a frack gas power plant nearby or an LNG terminal that threatens their ports. And of course, what this all means is the consequences of climate change, because frack gas is the worst fuel that we can develop with respect to climate change. When you burn it, you get a lot of CO2. And when you transport it and drill and frack for it, you get a lot of methane, which is the frack gas itself, leaking into the atmosphere. Frack gas, methane, is 86 times more powerful than carbon dioxide is as a greenhouse gas, a very potent greenhouse gas. So when we go in that direction, we actually worsen climate change, and we betray a lot of the work that governments have done, such as on the Paris Accord, to get emissions targets in to start to scale back emissions. So where we're going with the film, although the film doesn't deal with these issues of fracking and frack gas directly too much, we're taking it to the places where there are those fights going on. And every night we have this tremendous discussion with the audience about how they can get involved, about the sort of spine and the core of what's happening with activism right now in America and in the world. And it's always an incredibly meaningful discussion. And we've been here in Portland the last two nights, We've been with Tim DeChristopher, one of the subjects of the film, a great activist and leader in the climate movement. And we have one more screening tonight in Portland at 7 o'clock, which I will be Skyping in my Q&A because we're going to be doing simultaneously a Q&A in Kalama, Washington, which is fighting a methanol plant. But I'll still be there to answer questions directly from the audience. And it is our last night playing it in the theater. I encourage people to come down tonight to the Cinema 21 at 7 o'clock.
Right on. So, how was the crowd? The first night was just tremendous. It was all, you know, it was a pretty big theater there, the main theater at the Cinema 21. It was pretty well packed. There's a lot of folks there last night too.
Oh, absolutely. We had more people last night.
Oh, right on.
It's a really big theater. It's like 500 seats, but we're doing really well. We're happy with the turnout so far. It's really like you can really feel the power and the strength of the community here in Portland, and we're really appreciative of it.
And how about around the country? I think you said this is the 42nd or something of 100 cities. How has it been going elsewhere?
I counted last night again, so it's actually city number 44. Uh-huh. We've been pretty much in a different place every night. Here in Portland, we're doing this three-night stand because we are. But in New York, we did about seven or eight nights in a row. You know, the distribution strategy for this film is to bring it to the people who need it the most first, before it goes on HBO and blasts into 40 million homes. We bring it to one place at a time, and that's my commitment. I did that with my previous two films, which are Gasland and Gasland Part 2. They're films about fracking. I toured those all over the world to about 300 cities worldwide. At some point, I lost count, but it's been basically touring for the last, I don't know, about 8 years in service of this movement, which I've been watching grow and grow and get more and more creative and more interesting and more insistent, and also more generous and more compassionate and more supportive. This is the way that we do things. And that discussion, I think, has linked together a lot of people in disparate places. The movie itself travels all over the world to six continents, to 12 different countries. But when we tour it, what we're doing is we're also saying, you know, in Boise, with your fight against fracking, you must be connected against the fight against LNG in Coos Bay. And when we're talking in Chico to people about California about fracking, we're having that same kind of conversation in Miami or in Pensacola about sea level rise. So all these issues are interrelated, and with the tour we try to connect movement leaders, we try to connect the conversation, and it's been really rewarding. It's something that when you're witness to it every night, I feel like America is alive and well. You know, a lot of the time we worry about how does it feel to be in America right now? Are we wrapped up in consumerism? Are we wrapped up in war? Right now, there is an incredible rising tide of resistance across America, and I see that every night. And I think that's something we're trying to also report on and encourage when we do this tour.
Great. That's we need all the encouragement we can get. It's great to hear. Hear messages from emissaries like yourself who get to use these really powerful vehicles that you put your all your experience and your heart and soul and everything you learned. I just can't tell you how moved I was and impressed that you're, I don't know, to me it like I saw I don't know how you feel about this comparison, but I saw the film based on This Changes Everything, which is quite similar, and that was just an amazing film, and you're trying to do something similar, but it's a longer film, and you really bring to it, I find, is your personal journey, and that's something we can all can relate to. I certainly can. The past few months I've been, I think, going through something that you were talking about in your film, of sort of this place of kind of being, getting kind of stuck and paralyzed by the immensity. You know, once you stare it in the face long enough, it's like it can, there's myths, there's like ancient myths and legends about this sort of thing, staring into the abyss or whatever. But it's something very real now.
Yeah, it is an odyssey, and I think that along, you know, the film really takes place over a series of years. And it starts with me. I don't know if some people who've heard, listening in the audience have seen the movie Gasland. Gasland is a film about what happens when I was completely threatened. The area where I live in the upper Delaware River Basin of Pennsylvania, the watershed for New York City, gets invaded by the fracking industry. All around me, parcels are being leased for fracking. We end up winning that fight. So we keep the frackers out, and that's the beginning of this film. We save the Delaware River Basin, this incredible national treasure. And so I'm celebrating at the top of this movie. I'm like, you know, literally doing a victory dance. And then as I realize, I take a look at the forest, and I see that a hemlock tree that I planted when I was about 5 years old, which is now huge, is dying. And it's dying of a parasite called the woolly adelgid, which is much like the pine beetle parasite that you have here in the West, which is eating all of our iconic hemlock trees in the East, from Virginia all the way up to Maine. And that we're going to lose those iconic hemlock trees in our forests, and they are a keystone species, and we don't know what the forest looks like without them. And just shortly after that wake-up call on the climate, New York City gets smashed by Hurricane Sandy. It's sort of a 1-2 punch. And it leads me to understand and believe that, you know, we could beat the fracking industry in our own backyard, but we could lose everything we love about the area to climate change. We could lose everything we love to climate change. And that sets me on this journey to kind of find out about climate. And in the first half an hour, you know, it's like a crash course in just how badly we are doing in responding to climate change and how late it is to respond to climate change. And that is an extraordinarily despairing message. And I almost quit the movie right in the middle there and said, I can't do this anymore. But then, you know, for whatever reason, your mind asks a question, you forms a question. Well, okay, sea level rise, you know, flooding, drought, mass migrations, wars, increase of infectious diseases, the death of 30-50% of the species on the planet. These are the things that climate change will destroy. What are the things that climate change can't destroy? What are the things that are so deep inside of us that no storm can take them away? That's the question I ask myself. And then all of a sudden we're off on a different journey, which is about the human spirit, and it's about resilience. It's about all the things climate can't change. Those are our civic virtues. So the film becomes rooted and moored as it travels around the world in these different principles: courage, innovation, creativity, human rights, democracy, community, love, the moral imagination. These principles sort of anchor the film as we go from place to place, as we go from the indigenous environmental monitors in Peru, who are tracking oil spills deep into the jungle, or we go, you know, to China to visit human rights defenders who are battling environmental pollution in China, or the Pacific Climate Warriors, who are these incredible warriors from 12 different Pacific Island nations who are battling it out on the high seas, blockading coal ships with traditional hand-carved canoes, and like truly like a battle scene. So the movie becomes this emotional roller coaster with great, great heroes showcased in it. But that it ends up being about how do we keep fighting in spite of incredibly depressing and difficult information. And the movie, I think, then becomes this very uplifting journey about how do we keep fighting. And you know, we I don't know how it happened that way, but it's just the way it is. I mean, like, it's a climate change movie. It should be, like, insanely depressing. But it's totally the opposite. It re-energizes you. It gives you hope. It gives you a sense of joy and celebration as we fight. So that's the essence of it. And it's just a really interesting arc that has a lot of cathartic moments in it. And every night we go through that with the audience and then come out the other side and talk about it. It's been an incredibly engaged and exciting couple of months doing this tour. And like I said, tonight's the last night here in Portland at 7 o'clock, where I'll be Skyping in for the Q&A to talk to the community.
Well, Josh, you know, it's wonderful to hear you talk about, like, it's almost like you didn't make the film, but you're sort of like watching it yourself, you know. And that I think that's the impression I get. But that's wonderful, because, you know, you're not to be like new agey about it, but you're really channeling something here. You're like, you're taking a snapshot of a moment in time, or, you know, an overwhelming moment of in all its complexity, both the, you know, the effects of what's happening and the responses to it, and you weave it all together in a really remarkable fashion. But I want to just put out the number here to call in to speak with Josh Fox, who I'm speaking with on the phone here. It's 503-231-8187. That's the number to call in. My name's Paul Rowland. I'm substituting, if you're wondering, if you tuned in late, for Joanne Hardesty on Voices from the Edge this morning. And we're talking about a bunch of things, this film, but also I'm here with Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey of Columbia Riverkeeper. You just mentioned coal ships, and that was one of the many incredible scenes in that movie, the blockading of the coal ships. And of course, here we've had kayaktivists, just like there were on the coast of off the coast of Australia, as we saw up at Anacortes, where Jasmine says she wasn't, but she was participating in the actions against the Fenica ship icebreaker here last year, and she's involved in the movement to stop. Is it the fifth coal terminal?
It would be the sixth.
The sixth. Yeah. There's been a number of them already stopped. Most recently, the Cherry Point, which was a monumental victory there for the Lummi. You know, the indigenous peoples of the Northwest have really been stepping up. You know, maybe even out in the forefront of this movement. It's really good to see that they're getting such direct results, such strong results for their activism. And here, on the Columbia River, there is the Longview Terminal. Tell us about that one.
Yeah. So with the defeat of the Cherry Point Coal Export Terminal, which is a huge victory, and we are eternally grateful to the Lummi Nation for bringing their treaty rights forward and to the Army Corps for upholding their treaty rights and blocking the Cherry Point Coal Export Terminal, the sixth, the final coal export terminal that the Pacific Northwest has to defeat is in Longview, Washington. It's the Millennium Bulk Terminal's coal export facility. And, you know, the great thing about this project and this campaign in the Columbia River is we have the chance to stop an ecosystem before it gets destroyed. You know, we're not blocking coal ships yet because they're not here yet. We're not blocking coal trains yet because they're not here yet, because we still have the chance to stop these projects, you know, before a shovel hits the ground, before a single coal ship goes down the Columbia River. And it's outstanding. It's been an amazing fight over the past 6 years. We've seen six proposed coal export terminals threaten Oregon and Washington, and communities rise up and defeat, thus to date, five of them, the last one being Longview, Washington. We've seen projects defeated in Grays Harbor, Clatskanie, Boardman, Coos Bay, and now, most recently, Cherry Point. So we have one more to go, and this is going to be the hardest one. It's all eyes on Longview, you know, not only from a climate activist perspective, but from a coal investor perspective. You know, this is the last hope for them to maintain a dying industry, is to get their coal, U.S. coal, overseas to Asia through Longview. And we're both fighting. Both sides are fighting to the end.
And as I said, we're going to have Les Anderson from the community out there. And briefly, there's also this, the film is playing, Josh's film that he was just mentioning is playing in Kalama. Talk about the methanol plant briefly also.
I'm very excited that Josh is bringing the film to Kalama, Washington. Kalama is a small town about 10 miles south of Longview, so 30 miles north of Portland, right on the Columbia. It's a beautiful city, you know, most famous for, you know, Elvis Presley stayed there in the 60s. The Twilight high school scenes were filmed at the high school. So that's what Kalama is famous for.
It's also right across from the old Trojan plant, right?
It's right across from the old Trojan plant. But a company called Northwest Innovation Works wants to make Kalama famous for being home to the largest methanol export facility. And so the methanol would be manufactured from natural gas and then shipped overseas to China to make more plastics. The town is kind of in a whirlwind. Never seen such intense pressure from, you know, outside corporations coming in, trying to build pipelines through cemeteries, through people's backyards. Then to, you know, put this massive facility on their waterfront with a 245-foot smokestack. And so it's great that this film is coming, just so folks can have a chance to root themselves in the bigger picture. It's really easy to just feel like you're the only person fighting this massive pipeline and this big company and this huge climate impact. But in reality, there's communities all around the world who are doing this, who have done it. We're not reinventing the wheel. We are actually, standing on the shoulders of amazing communities and victories from all around the world.
And so there's two big issues, like 10 miles apart. That's a mm-hmm. that must be a lot for those small communities to deal with. You know, Josh, your film depicts these embattled, courageous, resilient communities all over the world. That are being more and more linked up through things like your film, but also through worldwide initiatives like Days of Action and different organizations like 350.org and other ones that are, linking people together, which is obviously essential. But the heart of it is often just these, villages in the Amazon or small Pacific Island nations, or communities in the rural Midwest, that are threatened by KXL pipeline, or in your situation in Northwest Pennsylvania, fighting this fracking. And of course, and so you mentioned LNG terminals. There was some really excellent organizing in Southern Oregon recently that helped lead to the at least temporary taking off the table of that LNG terminal in Coos Bay that you mentioned. So, what was it like, Josh, going to all these communities? It's so remarkable to see you, in a canoe. And again, it's not about you, it's like you probably had to struggle with some of the same things that Michael Moore did. It's the style, his style of filmmaking is always putting him in there, but it's not because it's about him. It's because we can't be just these passive observers. We're all participating in it.
Well, yes.
Go ahead. What was it? Yeah. What was it like interacting with all these people around, in these different communities around the world?
Well, would you really understand that there really isn't a big global climate change battle? There are thousands of local battles, and that adds up to one huge, amazing movement with so many faces and so many different aspects to it. And when you become familiar with the fact that, people are using the same kinds of techniques here as they are in the South Pacific, as we were in Pennsylvania, as they are in Texas, as they are in the Amazon. It is a kind of incredible synthesis of this moment in time and humanity, because what we're talking about here is a change in our value structure. This morning, there's a workshop with Tim DeChristopher. He's one of the subjects of the film. He became well known for blocking an oil and gas auction where our public lands were going to be auctioned off to oil and gas companies for fracking. And he went in and bid on those parcels and won a whole series of them, and then took his case to trial, spent almost 2 years in federal prison. He so eloquently in the movie says, maybe greed and competition weren't the best values for us to be basing our society on, because it's led us down this ruinous path. And he stepped up and put, his own body in the way of that auction and his own actions, and ended up in federal prison for 21 years, and he's out to
months, 21 months.
21, sorry, not 21 years, 21 months. Thank you for the correction. It is a little early for me. He's teaching a workshop this morning at 10 a.m. at the First Unitarian Church here in Portland about how the value structure in the film, how that can resonate with people. You know, what we're talking about here from this global perspective that you're talking, that you're bringing up, and it's so true, is a sea change in the value system that people are crying out for on the planet Earth. Right now, our system, you know, much to our own, you know, chagrin, I think, and detriment, is based on all these horrible things. Our system is based on greed. It's based on competition. It's based on individualism. It's based on violence. It's based on consumerism. It's based on institutionalized racism. It's based on competition with each other in really destructive ways. And the extractive economy of oil and gas is just as the banking system is nefarious in really pitting people against each other. And what we're trying to say is that from all across the globe, you know, whether that's in the Amazon or in China or in the South Pacific in Vanuatu or in New York City, for that matter, this new value system is emerging. And, you know, that's what I'm calling, it's not really a new value system. It's linked to a very old value systems of the indigenous world. But people are saying, no, we have to have a greater sense of mutual cooperation and mutual aid and mutual care and connected resistance. You know, when Bernie Sanders is out there talking about the political revolution, oh my God, how amazing is it that there's a presidential candidate in America of such prominence, and that we've actually caught up to where this guy has been in talking about this political revolution and democratic socialism in America. It's incredible. But people understand these are very dire circumstances. We need to change. We are suffering under this current, you know, value system and this current political regime. And that even though we've had what many consider to be the most progressive president of our lifetimes in Barack Obama, it hasn't protected us. This these ideals of democratic incrementalism without a sea change in value structure, without a political revolution, doesn't help us. You know, democratic incrementalism and establishment politics hasn't protected us from fracking. It hasn't protected us from the ravages of big banks exploiting us. It hasn't protected us from climate change. It hasn't protected us and stopped us from war or on internal surveillance. None of these things, even though we've had a quote-unquote liberal progressive president in the White House, we've marched further down these terrible roads with Obama. And we see right now that what we need is a total departure in values. And those values, I think, are what we talk about when we talk about the political revolution. It's very exciting that Bernie won Oregon. You know, he's on his way to winning a whole bunch more primaries on June 7th. So, you know, there is something happening at a very deep level in America and around the world. And I think it's a rejection of this system that has been so toxic, both literally and figuratively, to the planet and to its inhabitants. And I think, you know, we're doing one small part in showing the film. But the film is really a chronicle, I think, of that type of understanding, you know, and how it's transformative to people. And it's a beautiful thing to watch. You know, I think that there's, like, a lot of resistance when you think about, oh, it's a film about climate change. Oh, I don't want to go to that. Oh, it's going to be boring. It's going to be a dry kind of thesis. That's not at all what this movie is about. This movie is, you know, this kind of ride across the world. And I think it helps us study you know, understand, like, what does it mean to be courageous? What does it mean to innovate? What does it mean to be creative? What does it mean to be a moral person in this moment in time when our you know, planetary system is rebelling against us? You know, these are the deep questions inside the film, and it's that discussion that I think you have to have on a community level, on a local level, and whether that's happening in the South Pacific as they're planning those actions or it's happening here in Portland, the conversation is the most worthwhile and most rewarding one to be in, I think.
And
it's exciting on that level.
Yeah, I really appreciated the space and time you gave to the question and answer, because I find that a lot of events that we put on, there's sort of this almost this formulaic kind of perfunctory quality to it, you know, just like tack on, you know, 10 or 15 minutes at the end for you know, two or three questions. And usually it's the people who are presenting who end up, you know, responding mostly to those. That's, at least that's what I've noticed. So I really appreciate your kind of stretching, you know, the boundaries, stepping out of the box in that way too. So again, this can people go to this just to even today to this Tim DeChristopher workshop at 10 a.m.?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's open to the public. It's at the First Unitarian Church, and it's at 10 a.m. So there, you know, there it's a lot of people. It's a lot of people who are responding to the film. So the workshop is based around the film. Of course, it's based around Tim's activism and his ability to kind of help people process where they're at right now. So yeah, I mean, I'm definitely encouraging people to go. It's a remarkable opportunity. We've been touring with Tim in California and have done about 5 or 6 dates with him. We did some dates with him in Northeast as well. And it's really a remarkable opportunity. It's a special opportunity to go ahead and work with him and meet him. It's like you're absolutely right. You know, I don't think... I have a very weird and warped version of America in my head, which is that this is an incredibly active and exciting and adamant and great, amazing country that we're living in, because I'm seeing with my own eyes what's not reported on television. I'm seeing that revolution unfolding in front of me. I'm also a Bernie Sanders campaign surrogate, so I go out on the trail, and I've done quite a few speaking engagements in that context with Bernie at rallies and stuff. And so I see what's happening here, and it's amazing. We're in an incredible, amazing moment in America. Of course, the opposite side is just as scary. You know, the rallies for Donald Trump, the incredible enthusiasm for racism and fascism and corporatism that he embodies, that's also very, very scary. So we have a real fight on our hands. And these Q&As, you're absolutely right, the conversation that happens afterwards, the workshop we're doing with Tim, we've been also in before the movie plays, we've been doing like a mini concert with Gabriel Mayers, who's in the film. So he plays and sings music before. Then we go out to a bar after the movie, and we meet the audience further and play more music with them. Last night we were joined by Gabriel Mayers, myself, and a guy named Dan Galecki, whom you Portlanders may know from the great band Run On Sentence that I've played with many times. Dustin Hammond and Dan Galecki and Run On Sentence, great Portland band that I love. So, you know, we're trying to surround the whole movie with the idea of participation, engagement, whether that's music or it's dance or it's politics. You know, we're in a cultural shift right now in America. You know, we've got these phenomenal musicians, artists, speakers, activists, organizers, all combining to try to transform what this country is. We're bringing a little slice of that every time we come out with the film.
Yeah, you know, that's...
And that's an important thing to do.
That's the spirit in which I played that song by Reverend Billy in the Stop Shopping Choir. It seems like, you know, people who have really, as I said at the beginning, kind of staring this monster in the face and really engaging with it, you know, as Reverend Billy has on the streets of New York and now, you know, all around the country and maybe the world, with his amazing choir, his really diverse, multiracial, multi-everything choir based there in New York City. People are just challenged to come up with the, you know, our best, you know, responses to what's going on. And your comment on Tuesday night at the screening that, you know, what do we do? Someone asked. Well, I think you said more interesting things. I thought that was a beautifully succinct, you know, that's the spirit in which all creative direct action movements take it, you know, just respond to the situation with our best creativity and imagination. So, and again, I'm speaking with Josh Fox, the filmmaker who made Gasland 1 and 2, and now made this new film, How to Let Go of the Earth and Love What Climate Can't Change.
It's called How to Let Go of the World.
Of the World.
All the things climate can't change.
Yeah. Yes.
It's a long title, but it's first in our hearts.
And I guess I was just looking at The Earth Wants You by Reverend Billy. We also have on the phone, speaking of local resistance and response to the fossil fuel industry, as I mentioned earlier, we also have Les Anderson, who's with Landowners and Citizens for a Safe Community in Longview, Washington, which is involved in this effort to prevent the sixth and hopefully last fossil coal export terminal in the Pacific Northwest. Good morning, Les.
Good morning, Josh, and good morning to Paul and Jasmine.
And Jasmine, feel free to pop in as we're talking here. I guess like Josh directs these films, I sort of direct this program, but I don't feel like I'm in control of it. So talk about how you got involved with this issue. How long have you been facing this? I know there was like a long series of hearings earlier on this facility. It was like a couple years ago, I think. Tell us about your involvement.
Well, my involvement began really in the very beginning, and it started when the former governor of Montana came into Longview, Governor Brian Switzer from Montana, and he came in and told us we had the most important county in the state of Montana. He also described that coal and wheat shipments are very much the same. Coal's no different than wheat. And he told us a wonderful story about how coal would be great for our community and not to worry about what happens with it. Just look out the window, take a look at the telephone line, and that's all we need to know. And then when he finished with his presentation, they asked for questions, and I rose up and asked the audience, which was about 157 or 175 people that were there that morning, I asked them how many people were in favor of this project. Well, no one raised their hands other than the CEO for Millennium Bulk Terminals and two of our county commissioners. So right from the beginning, I could see that the community did not support this type of an action. So there were three of us in a basement that started moving against this project. And since then, we've developed a small army of outraged citizens in the city of Longview, and we've grown to about 5,000 members and concerned citizens since that time. On a personal level, what this means to me, I live right on the banks of the Columbia River, just downstream from the Millennium Bulk proposed project. And these ships that would be coming in to handle the bulk material would be about 700 additional ships that would be on our river. These belch a Class C bunker fuel that coats the homes already with the amount of ships we have with a dark, sticky black residue.
So that's 700 over the arc of a year?
Yes, that is correct. There'd be about 350 coming in and 350 going out per year. These would all pass within a few hundred feet of my home. And already when these ships go by with the numbers we have right now with existing industry, both my wife and I suffer from heart arrhythmia, even though we have healthy hearts. This is part of what happens when you have diesel particulates, the same diesel particulates we see coming off of these trains that be rumbling in here 16 a day, 8 in and 8 out. And this is 365 days a year. The ships out in the Columbia River never stop. They're always idling. They're always belching the diesel emissions. Then they would put in a 44 million pile of coal that would sit down on our docks. We have prevailing westerly winds. Those winds would blow against those coal piles and blow that coal dust across the entire city of Longview. We have the second largest asthma rates in the state because of existing industry we already have. This would probably put us into the number one position and would be very detrimental to the young children. Children, of course, consume twice as much air, twice as much water, twice as much food. and have much more energy than the rest of them, and they're so active. And when they're kicking around the coal dust that would be on the ground in the play yards and on their in the soccer fields, they're just breathing all of the coal dust over and over and over again. It's a recipe for a health disaster, that and the costs are all picked up by taxpayers as we do supplement most of their projects with rail improvements and improvements that are, because, for example, we have four at-grade crossings here. One of them we're starting to work on at an expense of the taxpayer just a little under $100 million. There'll be two more other segments of that road improvement, and by the time they're finished, there'll be around a third of $1 billion worth of taxpayer improvements that'll have to be done. There'll be a bridge that has to be replaced. So, and then the traffic. We'll be sitting clearing traffic. The trains take 20 to 30 minutes to go through an intersection, and then you have an additional 45 minutes or so to clear those intersections. So the effects and the to other commerce, one of the intersection blocks a bridge that takes is the nice most commercially traveled bridge in our state. I talked to business owners that said that these projects will absolutely destroy their business. So maybe good for the coal company, but just disastrous for everybody else.
Yeah, so you haven't talked a whole lot about the coal trains themselves. Maybe we'll bring Jasmine here in a second. We've only got 10 minutes left in the program. This is Voices from the Edge. I'm your guest host, Paul Rowland. Joanne Hardesty is, I believe, down in Salem doing some politicking of her own. Always good to have her out and about, making her voice heard, not just on the KBOO airwaves. And I'm speaking with Les Anderson from Longview, and I'm also still on the line with Josh Fox, the filmmaker who's in town presenting his new film, and with Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey of Columbia River Keeper. And, you know, we've talked about these issues a lot over the years on KBOO. It's been a long process, seeing this, like all these processes take this long. There's many, many different stages of the process. Now we're at the draft environmental impact statement for this process. I understand, Jasmine, you've looked at this. Maybe just take a couple minutes to just give us why should people be concerned about this? Can people go and testify? What's up with this DEIS?
Yeah, so the draft environmental impact statement, this is folks' last big chance to come to a public hearing on coal exports in the Pacific Northwest. So if you haven't done it yet, you should put it on your calendar because the hearing is next Tuesday, May 24th. It runs from 1 to 9 p.m. With a rally at 4 o'clock. It's at the Cowlitz Expo Center up in on the border of Longview, Kelso. And the draft environmental impact statement is basically a 1,000-plus page document that's supposed to list all of the potential impacts or lack of impact if they deem it to be not a concern. And at the hearing, we'll have a chance to elevate the parts of the draft environmental impact statement document that we think are incredibly important and what we think they need to do better at. One thing that I think the draft environmental impact statement does very well is talk about the impacts to the Columbia River. Millennium is going to bring nearly 1,000 more ships, round trip a year to the lower Columbia estuary. And the DEIS predicts an additional 3 groundings, collisions, oil spills a year on the lower Columbia as a result of this facility. And when you think about the fact that we've already had 2 and it's only May with oil spills and ships running aground, having another oil spill in the estuary, the heartbeat of our salmon recovery is devastating. So that's something that we need to bring up and say, you did it right. This is good. This is enough information for us to prove that, Millennium doesn't meet our standards. Where it kind of misses the mark and where they could do better I think its analysis on coal dust and greenhouse gas emissions are a little weak, and it's just too late in the game for us to be having weak analysis of the climate impacts of projects, of the health impacts of projects. We just can't keep,
They spend a lot of money doing these things. It seems like they should get them right.
Right. So this is the draft phase. It's a time to bring up those concerns. And then when the final environmental impact statement comes out sometime, you know, in a 9 to 12 month future timeline, we don't get to comment on that. That's the document that decision makers will make their decisions off of. So if it's not to our standards, it's too late. So the hearing is Tuesday. It runs all day up in Longview. There are buses from Portland. If you want to take a bus, there's one leaving from Holiday Park near Lloyd Center at 2 o'clock. And then there are two kind of meetup car shares heading out from the Sierra Club, which is over on 18th and Southeast Ankeny, one at noon and one at 6. You don't need to RSVP. Just show up. You know, through the beauty of community, it always works out. There's always a seat for someone. This is the moment where you will either be heard or you won't. And, at the end of the day, after seeing, films like Josh's and, reading the news headlines about the direction of where our future is going, I think everyone should know that they want, should be heard.
So how can people, I guess you got a website, is there like a phone number also to, if people didn't get that information?
All of it is up on the powerpastcoal.org website. It's powerpastcoal.org. And you can check it all out, make your comments, get your information. Les has been amazing at outlining the impacts to the local community, but it goes so far beyond Longview if this terminal were built.
So let's Josh, are you still with us?
Yes, of course.
So I'm so glad. And let's just give you a last opportunity. There's these twin issues. There's been so many things from the propane terminal in Portland to these Warrenton and Coos Bay LNG to coal terminals to proposals for oil terminals to it's so good. There's so many different groups and individuals fighting. So again, your film is going to be out in that area. Maybe there's an opportunity for, people from Kalama and Longview to sort of get together there and in that surrounding area of the Columbia River. That's going to be at the Kalama VW Hall, 222 North First Avenue at 6 p.m. And you're going to be there.
Yes. So tonight I will physically be in Kalama for a screening that starts at 6, and then we will do a Skype Q&A to the screening that's happening here in Portland that starts at 7. So tonight, Cinema 21, Portland, that's at 7 p.m. It's the final screening of How to Let Go of the World and Love All the Things Climate Can't Change, my kind of third film in this series of films on the environment, which begins with Gasland, and it takes you all over the world to show people fighting fossil fuel industry in a really emotional roller coaster ride of a movie. Tim DeChristopher is in that film. He's teaching a workshop this morning at 10 a.m. at the First Unitarian Church, which is at 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue in Portland. So yeah, and then we after Kalama tonight and Portland tonight, we head up the coast. We're in Tacoma, then Seattle, then Bellingham, then Vancouver, and then Boise, Idaho, and then on our way down to Telluride for Telluride Mountain Film Festival, Denver, and then we open in Los Angeles. So we have 11 dates coming up that take us all up the Pacific Northwest and then down to Idaho and Colorado and finally to L.A.
So anybody,
we'll head back to the East Coast.
Anybody listening in any of those places, they can get information. You've got a Facebook page. I've linked to that.
And a website.
And a website.
Our website shows the trailer for the film. That's howtoletgomovie.com, howtoletgomovie.com.
All right.
And that gives you all the tour dates. We're so excited to be here in Portland to screen the film tonight. We've had two amazing screenings. This is the last one for this.
We got to let you go, Josh. Thank you so much for being with us. Really appreciate it. Josh Fox, filmmaker. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome, and we're just so happy to support the activism that's on the ground here. We were so, so thrilled to be a part of that. So
all right.
Thanks to all the activists in Portland and to you.
Okay. Great. And let's give the last word to Les Anderson. What do you see ahead? You mentioned all those people were against the terminal. All that support? Has resistance continued to this export terminal?
I was in Montana last week, whistle-turred from Missoula to Billings. We did a DEIS scoping of the whole state because they were left out. I found from the mines of Montana all the way to the ports of Longview that people are outraged by this. They're joining hand-to-hand at the port to resist this ill-conceived project. I'm inspired by all the people that have good conscience and moral fiber that have stepped up to speak out against this. And again, Paul, I'd like to thank you, as Josh did, for your bringing this to the public.
All right. Thank you so much. Les Anderson from out in Longview, and also Jasmine, thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
All right. That's about it for Voices from the Edge. Your guest host, Paul Rowland. Thanks, and stay tuned for more great programming here on KBOO Portland.
When the storm tore off the roof, climate changed me. When the sky told me the truth, well, I always knew that I would have to change. But do I have to die to change, change, change?
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, community radio for Portland. It is 1 minute in front of 9 o'clock. We're about an hour away from Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Before that, at 9:30, it'll be Fight the Empire with host Per Fogering speaking with journalist Pete Dolak. At 10:15, it'll be Flashpoints, and at 11, Between the Covers, David Naiman interviewing Brian Blanchfield about his book, his latest, that is, coming up all this morning here on your Thursday. We get Teresa Mitchell hosting Press Watch in just a minute here with news you're not supposed to know, so stick around for that. It is KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Seattle Theater Group presenting An Astrophysicist Goes to the Movies. Two evenings with Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, September 19th and 20th at the Keller Auditorium. Tickets for Neil deGrasse Tyson this September are on sale